Welcome to the Are You Menstrual podcast, where we dive deep into all things women's health to support you on your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalbo, functional and integrative dietitian, also known as the Hormone Healing RD. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to keep learning, check out the podcast Patreon, where I share a bonus episode with additional downloadable resources each week. You can go to patreon.com/hormonehealingRD or check out the link in the show notes. All right, we have our pregnancy episode. I was going to do a case study, and then I was like, I mean, I'm pretty pregnant, so I can do it on, I could do it on myself. And last time I was pregnant with my first daughter, I did 3 episodes on the pregnancy. Like I did one, I think I did one in the beginning, partway through. I did 3 full episodes on it, or at least 2 that I'll link in the show notes, but I did at least a couple episodes. I went into great detail with labs. There's a lot of similarities for sure, but there's definitely a lot of differences with my approach to pregnancy this time. I mean, I'm not a first-time mom this time. I actually know a little bit, so that helps a lot. But I'm going to link those episodes. I'll refer to them a few times. And so if you have not listened and you want to listen, you can definitely go for it. So I'll kind of like compare to my previous pregnancy. I'll give some updates because I did an Instagram post. I got so many questions from all of you. I'll talk about what I'm doing differently. And then I have like some common pregnancy questions. A lot of people posted questions on that reel. I did like the most casual pregnancy announcement ever. So I was like, I didn't feel like thinking of anything cute or clever to do. Taking care of a toddler by myself right now while my husband's deployed. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to do a video that says, hey, I'm pregnant. And I am doing a bonus episode where I'm answering pretty detailed questions from my Patreon members. I have a bunch submitted so far. I'm sure they'll submit some more, but just some specific things around like iodine supplementation stuff during pregnancy, which I'll talk a little bit about here because I am using it again, preeclampsia, conceiving over 35, copper levels, vitamin A, and like what's safe, things like that. And like, you know, prenatals, which is always a common question. I have a bonus episode on Patreon on that, but I'll go over a bunch of stuff. Mineral imbalances that I commonly see, and then a few people that are currently pregnant that want some tips for symptoms that they're experiencing. So you can get all of my Patreon content on patreon.com/hormonehealingRD. Remember, this episode is for informational purposes only. Please talk with your provider before you make any nutrition supplement lifestyle changes. All right, so a little quick rundown of like pregnancy details. This is my second pregnancy. I conceived when my daughter was 13 months old. And a lot of people were very concerned that I conceived so soon again. And I'm like, I mean, she's not like 6 months, that she's over 1. But I understand in this like holistic functional nutrition space, there's a lot of talk around pregnancy spacing or child spacing. And I did get a question on that, so I'll go into that more. But this is something where it's like this is why like information's helpful online, and it's so helpful to learn from people. You know, child spacing is definitely, we see that a lot in different cultures. But ultimately, you have to decide what's right for you. And there's a lot of decisions in like nuances that I think go into this. At least for our family, they definitely did. I felt very ready, honestly. Once I was a year postpartum, my daughter turned 1, and then it was Mother's Day soon after that. And my husband and I were talking, and we were, you know, he really wants to have more kids. I really want to have more kids. We love being parents. Eliana is so fun, and at this age is so fun. She's like 17, just over 17 months at the time I'm recording this. It's like a blast. So we felt really ready, and I think that's an important thing to consider. Like, are you ready stress-wise, time-wise, schedule-wise to have another child? And a big thing that came up for us, you know, my husband is active duty military. He's in the Air Force, and he works, the company, the part of the military he works for is very busy. He is often gone a lot. sadly. So we do have some heads up on his deployment schedule, though. Like his longer deployments, we typically know pretty far in advance. And so we knew that he was going to be deploying in August of this year and then coming back like around end of December, beginning of January. And when we decided, you know, in like May, end of May-ish, we were like, okay, we feel like we're ready to stop avoiding, because if you listen to my previous episodes on pregnancy, it took us a year to conceive our first daughter. And I think I was just way too stressed. He was also very stressed. We just had a lot going on with like where we were living and so many transitions in life. And, you know, I was working a lot trying to build up my business and also like put systems in my business so that I'm like, you know, I was like 31, 32 at the time. And I'm like, I really want to have kids soon, but I like, that's not even like an option right now with how my business is run. And so there was a lot of things going on. And plus it's just really stressful being a military spouse. It really is. His life is stressful. His health is greatly compromised when he's deployed, unfortunately. And yeah, when we finally conceived, it was amazing, but it took us a year. And I was like, man, this is what I do for a living. Like this sucks, you know, like this doesn't feel right. But stress, that was like my beginnings of being like, I really have to address this stress. I can't hide from it anymore. It's affecting my life and what I want to achieve and growing a family. And so that was like a big wake up call. I thought that it was going to take us longer to conceive our second daughter, to be completely honest. You know, we're like, okay, well, you know, it took us a year to conceive Eliana. We both were open and ready. We felt ready. I felt ready physically, which was really important to me. I took postpartum like very slowly. You know, I have helped a lot of women through the postpartum season. I've had so many friends and family members go through pregnancy and postpartum. So I guess that was like a really beneficial thing for me, like being older and having my first pregnancy. I was like 32 when I was pregnant and had my daughter. And I just had a lot more experience in that way and a lot of more people to lean on for advice that, you know, I felt like I was going to get sound advice from, cause some advice you get, you're just like, okay, I'm just going to nod and say thank you. But I knew, I was like, I'm not going to rush into anything postpartum, especially cause I, you know, I'm definitely consider myself an athlete. I've been an athlete my whole life. And I knew that I was going to want to get back to that, but I'm like, I'm just going to give my body so much grace and time to recover. And for me, I think that made a really big difference. I did not focus on weight loss, and I'll definitely talk about this again. But a lot of people are like, well, were your minerals replenished? How were your hormones? It was only a year postpartum. Are you still breastfeeding? I'm like, yes, I'm still breastfeeding my daughter. And I did testing leading up, and that's the other thing that I was like, you know, me and my husband felt like we were ready. His deployment schedule was coming up, and we're like, okay, so if you're gone August to January, then you're home for a year. And I was like, that would be great, you know, because he was gone. He deployed like when my daughter was like 2.5 months, then that was rough for everyone involved. And so it was one of those things where like timing wise with his deployment schedule, it made sense. I felt physically ready. I did some thyroid blood work. My thyroid looked so good. And it's one of those things I've really struggled with since I got off the pill, literally, maybe even before then. I just never had my thyroid tested when I was that young. But since I was like 20 years old, so very long time. And it did improve a ton before I conceived my first daughter. But this time I didn't have like super high expectations. I was like, I'm doing a lot postpartum. I'm trying to run a business, trying to support other women in their health and their healing, trying to be a good mom and also like enjoy my time with my daughter, you know, not get so caught up in like being busy and rushing around. Like I hate rushing. I hate rushing. That's something that I'm very, very mindful about with, our daughter. So, just like all those things, like it was all coming together. And I was like, wow, my thyroid looks really good. My hair test looks good. I did a lot of gut work, which I'll talk about when I talk about more of the comparison, like postpartum. And that like made a huge difference in like my overall health. Like I felt healthier going into this pregnancy than I did my first one. And I think because it's my second pregnancy, people assume that that's not the case, but like it can be. Yes, I mean, I have the knowledge, right? I have the background, I have access to testing and all that stuff. Not everyone has that. But I will say, like, I mean, we have so many clients that go on to have multiple pregnancies and they're like, oh, my second pregnancy, my third pregnancy, so much better. One, I think you learn a lot of things in between, right? But then also it's like taking care of yourself, like it really does pay off. So that was pretty much the reasoning behind us being like, okay, we're ready. And then we just happened to get pregnant the first month that we did not avoid, which was like really shocking and very exciting all at the same time. We were just like, wait, what? Like, this was the first time I ovulated and, you know, we conceived right away just because it hadn't happened the last time when we got pregnant with our first daughter. So, very exciting. Also, like I just kind of thought like we probably won't conceive before he deploys, but hopefully we can see when he gets back. But honestly, based on like his schedule and stuff, I'm happy because now when he gets home, we'll have a whole year. And I'm due in March, so we'll get like 10 months before he has to leave again. Well, for like a long deployment, he'll probably be gone for short trips in between, but you know, we can handle those. So yeah, that's kind of like my why, how we even got here with this whole conception thing. I didn't really share with the world that we were trying to conceive again, because I don't think you guys really care or need to know that. But yeah, a lot of people were surprised and I'm like, it's okay. I also got my cycle back 5 months postpartum, which was like shocking. And I was not ready for it at all. Because I was breastfeeding, we bed share. I mean, I spend literally every second with my daughter, except for when she's napping and sometimes sleeping at night. So it was one of those things where I was like, man, I was really hoping to get a little more time without having a cycle. But now, you know, looking ahead to the future, of course, I had 7 cycles where I ovulated, and that's a lot of time to build up good hormone production. So that's the other thing. It wasn't like I didn't have a cycle postpartum and I just had my first one back and we conceived. I had been cycling for, it was like my 8th cycle that I got pregnant postpartum. Okay. So some of the comparisons, I did so much work, I would say like mentally, emotionally, physically, when I had my daughter, like the postpartum to every, you know, people focus so much on pregnancy, not that it's not important. It obviously is, but I'll tell you what, postpartum is a whole other thing. And so that was something where like, I feel healthier now than I was before. Yes. Is it a lot to, you know, like taking care of my daughter and trying to work and fit, you know, doing the nap time hustle and all that stuff? Absolutely. But there's no other way that works for me to do it. We tried to have childcare. We tried to do a nanny and I just couldn't do it. It just did not work. I didn't like it. Eliana didn't like it. It was hard. It was one of those things you kind of feel like you need to do it because you're like, I need to work more. But I'm like, honestly, we will figure it out, because ultimately, deep down, I knew in my gut that it was wrong for us. And I know not everyone has that ability to make that decision. But I just couldn't do it. I just could not do it. And I don't know any other way to describe it. And I was like, we'll just figure it out. And I mean, when my husband's not deployed, it's like we have a whole schedule that allows me to work a lot more. So it's a lot easier when he's home. And it works for us. But that was like that was a really stressful part of my postpartum period. And I felt like once we figured that out, it reduced a ton of my stress and I could really like enjoy things. So that was like figuring that out was huge for me, because stress is very important. Like, yes, I worked on my gut health. I supported my body. I didn't really do anything different, like food wise. I just ate the same way I always eat. I'm always mindful of like hydrating properly with minerals. The biggest thing was looking at my gut health, because in my pregnancy with my daughter, Eliana, I had like a bunch of gut things pop up. And it's funny because I did a stool test before I conceived her and there wasn't much on it. My immune system didn't look great. I didn't have GI symptoms, but you don't have to have digestive symptoms in order to have gut issues, right? And my acne flared first trimester and I was like, oh, come on, this is not fun. And then it got better. And then I started to get eczema, like in the corners of my eyes. And I have like pictures and everything and posts online. I had eczema in the corner of my eyes, which is like a huge sign of liver stress. I'm like, phenom. So I had to start addressing that. And there's only so much you can do during, there's a lot you can do during pregnancy gut wise. And that's what I started to do. But it was like, I knew that I would get a lot more progress with that postpartum, because think about it. You're pregnant, you have higher hormone levels, your body's doing so much work. To add more work with like certain supplements for your gut, it can be helpful, but I just didn't want to tax my liver more and more and more. So I just kind of did like the bare minimum to get the eczema to go away. It did end up resolving in my third trimester, thank goodness. It was so uncomfortable, very, very painful. But I knew, I was like, I need to work on my gut health postpartum, because my gut health, of course, it still affects Eliana's gut health. And now she has a bout of eczema that we are currently, it's very minor, but I don't want it to get too crazy, because I have so many friends and clients who the eczema can get really bad really quick, especially in kids. And it's just like, it's very life altering, especially for them, for the parents, for everyone. And I knew, like, I did a stool test on her when she was really, when she was a baby. Oh my gosh, I forget the name of it. But I knew that there was a little bit of imbalance in her gut, and we did some probiotics when she was little, which were so hard to get her to take because she wouldn't take a bottle. She only nursed. So we didn't get them in every single day, but it's like she did definitely get some. And then as she got older, they were so much easier to give to her in like food and stuff. But I wanted to work on my gut health so I could make sure that you know, that's still going to affect her gut health. And then, of course, this baby's gut health. And so I did a stool test postpartum, and I did not do any of this work until my daughter was like 8 months old, because I wasn't ready. And the way that I feel about testing is that you should not do lab testing if you don't have the capacity to make change based on the results. And it's okay if you don't. That means that right now, testing is not the thing that's going to help you. Like for the first 8 months, I was, one, in the beginning, I was just enjoying her. I'm like, I couldn't have cared about anything else. And then I knew my husband was leaving soon. So we just spent all of our time together. And then when he was gone, I definitely wasn't going to do any testing. I think I did do a hair test at one point. I think my mom cut my hair. I don't think he was, or I either did it like while he was gone or right when he got back. But that was like the only thing I did. And then I waited till I was like 8 months postpartum, did a GI MAP stool test. And that is what my immune system improved from my test before my first pregnancy. So I was like, yes. And then I did still have some imbalances. Absolutely. I had a pathogen present. I didn't have any parasites, but I didn't have enough good bacteria, and my digestion didn't look great. So I did basic supplements. I did lots of liver support. And I know that that's very controversial while breastfeeding, but you just got to do what works for you. Your liver is still working while you're breastfeeding. So I don't know. You can just do lower doses of everything. Obviously talk to your practitioner, because not every supplement is safe for breastfeeding or pregnancy, but very few are, unfortunately. But you can time nursing like 2 hours away from when you take supplements, or do castor oil packs, because I did that kind of stuff. I used sauna a little bit, but I would always do it like right after I put her down for a nap. You know, like that's when I'd be like, okay, this is when I'm going to take my supplements, or do any sort of like therapy where like castor oil packs or sauna, where like I wouldn't necessarily want her to nurse right away. So that's how I like timed it. And it wasn't always perfect, but she's okay. And her gut health, it was interesting because she had some cradle cap going on in the beginning, and she had some baby acne. And I know a lot of those things can definitely be considered normal, but it was like they were kind of lingering for a while. And once I started, because I did a lot of liver support before I did the gut test, I started to notice her stuff clearing up. And I was like, okay, this makes me feel better. But it's like, you can't address this stuff while breastfeeding. It is very nuanced. You have to do what works for you. And honestly, like, I can't give advice unless I'm working one-on-one with someone. So I know I'm going to get questions, but it really depends. But like, milk thistle is safe during pregnancy. I'm pregnant right now and I'm taking milk thistle. And I definitely plan to continue it postpartum if I feel like I need it. But again, like, I did so much gut work before this pregnancy that I do feel like that's going to set me up to not need those types of things postpartum. It was just that, you know, when you're pregnant, your immune system shifts and a lot of things become uncovered, like my eczema and gut imbalances. So that's like how I chose to address it postpartum. I did some very low dose things of certain herbals to help with the overgrowth. I really supported my digestion, which was key. I did that with digestive bitters. I did the chamomile ones because they're safe while you're breastfeeding or pregnant, from Urban Moonshine. Sometimes I just did apple cider vinegar if I like ran out or I didn't have them easily on hand. I do well with either of those, so I kind of like interchange them. And at the time postpartum, I wanted more blood sugar support, so I tended to do the apple cider vinegar more because that can help with stabilizing blood sugar levels. Because when you're not sleeping as much, you definitely can notice your blood sugar being a bit all over the place. So doing all that gut work made a big difference this time. I felt really good my first trimester. I had like 2 weeks from weeks like 7 to 9 where I was pretty nauseous, but that was it. And I was like, oh, thank God. So I think that played a huge role in that, because you can, if you have histamine issues, nausea can be huge, especially if you have like hyperemesis. I think a lot of that is related to like histamine mast cell issues. I'm going to do a whole podcast episode with someone that I really like how she explains all this stuff, on that. So I will definitely talk about that in the future. That was like a huge request. And I'm like, it's probably your gut histamine, mast cell issues, which a lot of people have, unfortunately. I also utilized a lot of iodine during my first pregnancy because I was still trying to support my thyroid and I was still deficient going in. And this time I'm using a lot less. I just didn't feel like I needed as much. I took it through pregnancy, all through postpartum, since your requirements go up while you're breastfeeding. And then I was closely monitoring my hair tests, my thyroid labs. I actually did not redo my iodine urine test because I was like, I just don't think that's going to change my decision. Because if my hair tests and my thyroid labs look good, I'm not going to worry about, I still am taking iodine. I'm just taking a lower dose. And if I feel like I need more, if I do any testing that shows me I need more, I would increase it. But, lower dose is working well for me right now. And again, like, I feel really good. My labs look really good. So I'm like, I'm not going to mess with it, right? I'm not going to create a problem that's not there. Like I said, I didn't focus on weight loss after pregnancy. And I think this is an important thing to mention because a lot of people are asking about like, are you replenished? Are you fully nourished again? How do you know you're ready? Like, your body, like, physically was ready. But I mean, postpartum, I really focused on eating enough food, number one, because I wanted to be mindful to support my milk supply, and stress, right? You're not sleep. Like, I didn't sleep terribly postpartum, but in the beginning, it's like, you don't know what you're doing. We had a lot of issues with nursing and tongue and lip ties and a lot of stress there that I'm really hoping to avoid this time. Cause it's like, I have the experience now, but it was very stressful in the beginning. So it was like not great sleep. I was just so worried about her and I just didn't know what I was doing. And there's so many decisions to make and you're like, man, I got to block out all the noise and figure out what's right for us. And that was hard, but I think that like, that was a huge learning kind of moment for me. And it really changed my perspective on a lot of different things. So I'm okay. I'm grateful for it now. But I really focused on replenishing, eating enough, getting enough protein. So, so important. I just feel like, I don't know if everyone, I tend to see this in a lot of the clients we work with, not everyone, but it's like, protein I can easily slack on. So it's one of those where I really have to focus on it and be like, nope, I definitely need more protein. So for me, that's always, it's a really easy focus, and it's not anything that makes me feel like obsessive or stressed out. So focusing on getting enough protein, and just honestly getting as strong as I could. I did not do any type of exercise until I think I was like around 5 weeks. I felt like ready to start slowly moving again. And I was not lifting any weights or anything like that. I just mean like moving my body more. We were going for walks before then, but that was it. And doing like breath work. But I was like, okay, I feel like I'm slowly starting to get ready to move my body. And then I just really did not overdo it, because I was like, I don't feel like it. And I'm at the point in my life where I know how to listen to my body, and I'm so grateful for that. And it's funny, because I did a podcast episode with Lindsay from BirthFit on postpartum, and she was talking, I wasn't 9 months yet, I don't think. But she was talking about how like at 9 months, a huge shift happens. She sees it happen for so many women where they finally feel like they can lift heavy again, and they really start to feel strong and more like themselves. And it's, I'm not kidding you, like right at 9 months, that's how I felt. And it makes sense to me, because it's like, you know, you grew a baby for 9 months, and now they've been out of you for 9 months. So it just makes sense that your body has had that significant amount of time to recover. Now, I wasn't like fully recovered at 9 months, but I could really start lifting heavy, going a little bit harder with my workouts. And I didn't feel like it was taxing on me, because I was, before it was like, listen, I have all these other things going on. I was still trying to figure out how to like work and be a mom and be happy and not be too stressed and enjoy my life with my husband. It was a lot. So I was like, honestly, like, I know a lot of women focus on weight loss postpartum, and I'm just like, how do you even have time to worry about that? I was just trying to get the hang of things, basically. And so right around that 9 month mark, I was like, okay, I feel like we're like really starting to get the hang of things around here, and I can go a little bit harder. Again, I was not focused on weight loss, because to me, that tells me nothing about my health. Right. So I did, that's right around the time I was doing stool testing and started a gut protocol. Like for me, that was so much more important, and because it was something I knew I needed to address, before we conceived our second child. And just being really strong. I got super strong right before I had Ileana, and I'm so grateful for it, because it's hard to work out during pregnancy. It really is. It's something that definitely makes me feel the best. Like I'm still very active now, but it gets harder and harder. It's hard first trimester, right? I mean, it's just hard to have the energy. And then, because for me, it's hard to like just keep up with eating in a first trimester. Second trimester, it's usually easy. And then when you start to get really big, like right around that 34 weeks, I guess my belly got so huge, and I'm like, man, this is hard. And it just, you know, doing hard things before you get pregnant can be very helpful for your mindset towards doing those things that you know are going to make you feel good that are very hard while you're pregnant. So that is something that I'm like very grateful for, and that I wanted to do again. I wanted to get as strong as I could before I conceived. We conceived this daughter. We're having another girl. And then I definitely had some stressful seasons postpartum. Like I mentioned, my husband was deployed for a while. We had a bunch of short deployments where he was gone like last minute and stuff. It's just hard. It's hard, right? Because it's like, we're trying to work things out with our schedules so that I can work. And it was just very stressful. But not like the whole time, but we had a few times where he up and left, and he was gone for like 3 weeks. And I was like, man, I have got to get it together, because this is going to happen again. And I was like, I want to feel good. And because it affects how my daughter feels. It affects like how our whole house feels. Even our dogs, oddly enough. So that's really when I was like, I had to relearn how to take care of myself as a mom, basically. And learn how to do it when my husband wasn't home, which is very difficult, but now it feels easy because he's been gone for like 2.5 months, I think. And now I'm like in the swing of things, and this is like our fourth deployment with a kid. So it's not like brand new. So, you know, it's challenging, and it's interesting. Cause like when I did a podcast sharing my birth story, with Caitlin. Oh my gosh, what is her podcast? It's Happy Home Birth podcast. And I was like, honestly, yes, I had a great home birth, but it was extremely painful and difficult. It just was. And she was like, you know, a lot of times I think we have the birth that we need to. And I do think that I needed to have that really challenging, mentally and physically, just so challenging, because it was going to be a hard first year of postpartum. And it wasn't all hard. I don't want to make it sound terrible. Like, I've had a great time. I love being a mom. My daughter's hilarious. And we have a lot of fun. I'm definitely tired, like, sometimes, but overall, obviously we felt ready to have another, so it couldn't be that bad, right? But yeah, those were just that stressful season in postpartum, like being mindful of that. And I was not overdoing workouts then. I would definitely sleep more. I'd make sure I was eating enough, like going back to those basics. And it can feel so like that's it, but it's like, that was it. That's what I had to focus on, like doing the little things to take care of myself and finding routines with my daughter so that I was not like hyper stressed and frazzled all the time. And then just being incredibly intentional and mindful with my work schedule and how I get things done. And I mean, I asked for help, but it's like, I don't have family nearby. And again, we tried the nanny. It made me way more stressed and miserable, to be honest. Sorry for listening to this, but it's just, I just can't do it. It's not right for us. I like just die when I'm not with my daughter, even when I want to be alone, which I feel like only a mom would understand. So it was just figuring that out was like a big thing. So that's like all the things that I did differently this time. It really forced me to, like, you know, how can you make it work when things are really hard and feel impossible and still take care of yourself? And it was a challenging year, but it was one where, again, I felt healthier then. I was like in May, like, I'm ready to have another baby. I cannot believe I'm saying those things, but I really do. And then when we conceived and we went through that first trimester over the summer, highly do not recommend. Oh my gosh. It's like, because we live in North Carolina and normally I'm in Florida now because my husband's gone, but basically the same thing, right? Just so hot. I was just so much more sensitive to the heat in the first trimester. My first trimester last time was in the fall. It was great. But I did not have as much nausea, just a couple weeks, which was amazing. My energy was good. I just had to eat a lot, which happened last time, but it was interesting. So I was thinking back and I'm like, man, I had to eat frequently. Even like halfway through my second trimester last time, which is like kind of a long time, because typically after the first trimester, you see a shift where you don't need to constantly eat. But I think I had a reflux that was showing up as nausea. I had a lot of like the eczema. I had a lot of the histamine type symptoms in my last pregnancy because of some gut imbalances and gut stress. Which then puts stress on your liver and then can show up like in your skin and eczema like my skin had. So I had to eat frequently. This time, once I hit 11 weeks, I was like back to normal with my food, which was so nice because I like just eating big, dense meals and just having a few of those, couple snacks. And then like, I like small snack. Like I want a true snack. I don't want like another meal. So that works. That's like when I feel the best. So it was really nice being able to go back to that much sooner this time. And again, I think it was some reflux, like histamine symptoms that I was experiencing last time. Oh, I would say like, I've been outside a lot more this time. Being pregnant with a toddler is very different, right? It's so funny when I talk to friends that have multiple children, they're like, how are you feeling? Like, are you okay? You know, is it like SOS type of situation? Are you all good? Because obviously, you know, I don't sit down. Like I sit down for like meals. Otherwise me and Eliana are always like outside doing stuff, or she's like helping me clean, do things around the house. We're always going. And unless we're reading, she loves to read. We read a lot of books. It's like, she's just like me. It's so funny. We're moving and grooving a lot. I get like over 13,000 steps every day, even on the days I don't work out. So I'm like, okay. Very active this pregnancy. Definitely, I would say more active than my last one. And then just getting more light exposure. You know, last time, think about it, like I was probably working like 50 hours a week trying to prep for a maternity leave. I hired another nutritionist and then had to train her. It was a lot. There was so many things I was trying to prepare for and get ready for and shift in my business so that I could be a mom and be able to be home with my daughter. Cause it's like, I knew that childcare wasn't going to work for us when I was pregnant. So I was like, you know, viciously trying to figure everything out. But yeah, I think the light exposure this time makes a big difference. I'm very mindful of that, especially cause you know, one of the things I think about for Eliana is like, I just want her to have a really good circadian rhythm because I want her to sleep good because I want to sleep good because I need so much sleep because I'm pregnant. I want her to nap well. You know, sleep is, it's so important for her growth. It's also so important for my sanity. And because I work while she sleeps. So, you know, she's had a really good circadian rhythm even since she was like a newborn. Because we always took her outside a ton. And so that's something that we still do. Like we eat breakfast outside in the morning. We go for a morning walk, lots of morning light. And I think that, and that's been something that I'm like, I really think that helped my thyroid because your thyroid hormone production is very much so based on your circadian rhythm. It fluctuates throughout the day. So that's like, I think that's has had a huge impact on my thyroid this past year. And even going into this pregnancy, because I'm going to check it again. I checked it first trimester. I'll check it again, probably end of second, maybe going into my third. And then I'll probably do one more test before I have her. But yeah, those are that. And I wasn't doing that because I was working so much last pregnancy. And I think it has made a huge difference. But the gut work, the light exposure, working on my day-to-day schedule so that I'm not constantly rushing around like a crazy person. Because it's like Eliana doesn't do well when she's rushed. Neither do I. Does anyone? So I think that has really helped. And yeah, I'm in a hard season. I'm not going to say I'm not right now because my husband's deployed, but we're figuring it out and it's definitely not impossible. And I have a positive outlook with it, which is like, you know, not easy to do. Usually I'm like I run out of positivity at some point during a deployment. But 2.5 months in and I'm like, I feel like pretty good about this. I have compiled all of my favorite and I think best to get started with mineral resources in one place, and that is my Minerals 101 guide. This is a free guide that I will share my screen for those that are watching the video version of this podcast and go through with you quickly now. So I basically wanted a place where like if someone's new to my podcast, my Instagram, and you're like, wow, she mentions minerals a lot and I can go off on tangents and talk about how they're so important for different things. I wanted a place where you could just download this quick guide and get right into, okay, what are minerals? How do they affect our hormones? How do they get depleted in the first place? How can we test them? And then I have additional learning and resources depending on the topics that you want to get into. But I think this is definitely the best way to get started with all my content that I share, especially if you're brand new here and you're like, I don't even know where to get started with minerals. Start here. And I promise you won't be confused and you'll know what are the next steps to take. And if you have specific health concerns, you'll see at the very end of the guide here, I go through, okay, so if you want to take our mineral quiz, if you have thyroid health concerns, if you have period concerns, if you just want to hear from me on a regular basis, here's my newsletter. So I tried to put everything in one place. I also have mineral deep dive podcast episodes that I link to if you want to get into specific minerals as well. But I highly recommend downloading the guide. I put a lot of work into it and I think it's a perfect place to get started. So you can go to the link in the show notes, the Minerals 101 guide, and get started now. I think a lot of it's just like I've learned a lot and grown a lot as a person, and I've worked on my health and my stress and my nervous system health and how I can, because you know, when you have a kid, you're like, you imprint that on them and you're like, I want so much for you to be healthy and happy. And I think that was a really good motivator for me, to be honest. So it's made a big difference. And how you live matters. I know I talk about this all the time, but like, I was too much behind a computer. I was stressed trying to figure everything out and like, get stuff done. And so I just don't, you can't negate that, right? Like I'm sure people are going to be like, are you sure really you feel healthier now? But I really do. And I think a lot of it's just that balance and everything and not overdoing any one thing. And it's, you know, we have our one-on-one clients fill out this like life actualization form where like you measure the different, it's like when you, I'm sure you guys have seen it. It's like circles and you put in like how satisfied you are with different aspects of your health in your life, like mental, physical, emotional, relationships, like functionally, like do you feel like your body functions well, the systems in your body function well? And so many times people that are very, very ill and really struggling with their health, they're not checking off things like self-care, how they're taking care of themselves, like their relationships, you know, are you happy with like your work life, your all these different areas that are not just our health. Like we can't just focus on our health. And it's not that I didn't focus on my health, but it was just that I was so much more focused on it from like a different angle. Like I was like, how am I going to work on my day-to-day stress versus like looking at a hair test where I'm like, okay, well clearly I'm stressed. So I'm going to take a bunch of supplements. It's like, no, how am I going to, I know why I'm stressed because I'm a new mom and I'm trying to figure all this stuff out. Like, how am I going to take action every single day and try to make that a little bit better every day? And it, I mean, honestly, it took us like a year to figure it out. So, and even still it's constantly changing because she's constantly changing and growing. And then, you know, now I'm pregnant. So that like changed a lot of things too. So it's always evolving, but I think having that flexibility, and it always makes me go back to the nervous system stuff. And if you have not listened to the nervous system episode with Irene Lyon, do yourself a favor and go listen. It's so good. Or just go check her out. I mean, she has really been truly monumental in like my nervous system work and growth myself. So that's why I always recommend her. And I just love her perspective on it. Because a lot of it goes back to like when we were kids and babies. And I feel like that's where we have to begin with that work. And that's why I think when you have a kid, you're like, oh my gosh, all this stuff is like in your face, you know, and you're like, wow, I can't hide from this anymore. Like I have to address it. So I can't say it like that was like a huge part of it and something I'm continuing to work on in this pregnancy. Cause I was definitely stressed with Eliana and I feel bad that I imprinted her with those hormones, but I'm, you know, I'm doing the best I can now to like support her and re-regulate that. But obviously the more you know, the better you can do. So with this baby, I'm really trying to be mindful of that. And it's been, I think, just so good for my health in this pregnancy, honestly. A lot of people ask me about timing hair test and like, I think labs in general, honestly, during pregnancy, but definitely hair test because it looks at the last 3 months. So ideally I would say, before you conceive, if you could do one, that'd be great because then that gives you more insight into like what supplements do I absolutely need and not need during this pregnancy? What foods should I absolutely try to prioritize and ones that maybe aren't as big of a deal for me during this pregnancy? Like that's how I look at it. Like if you see your potassium is really low, don't get upset because you have low potassium and then you're worried about your baby's potassium. Look at what can I do right now? And potassium you really want to get from food. How can I start getting more potassium rich foods in my diet? Like what am I going to be swapping out, adding in, minimizing? Like what's that going to look like? So I think the hair test can be so helpful for that. And then I like to do a check-in like right around the halfway mark-ish. I did mine a little earlier this time. Because I was doing one for my daughter. So I was like, I might as well just send mine in. So I think I was like 16 weeks. Last time I did it like right around 20 weeks, which is where I'm at right now. But a month is not a big deal. It's really, what are you going to do with the information, right? First, for a lot of people, I think it's a wake up call that what, again, like how you're living, you're really stressed. Are you stressed about, is it a mindset thing? I mean, so many people have dealt with pregnancy loss and I just don't necessarily think that's something that gets easier. Like even the further along you get in your pregnancy, I've had so many clients where they're like, I'm still scared. I can't help it. And it's like, okay, so what are we going to do to help when you get those moments when you're scared? What's going to be the coping tool that you're going to use to support yourself and bring yourself back down? And that's obviously going to be different for everyone or like any big stressor. Like if you, I think of like people that I've had that are like in a job that they hate. And I know I talked about this with Aaron on one of the episodes. Some people got mad online. I'm like, okay. But that's a huge stressor. You're there all like 40 hours plus a week, right? So that's really difficult. How are you going to support your body in that? What's the action that you're going to take? But sometimes, you know, we don't feel good during pregnancy. Maybe you have hyperemesis, but you're super sick your whole pregnancy. Maybe you're super fatigued. Maybe you developed an autoimmune condition or you had one going in and it's like your symptoms are really bad right now, which can happen because of the hormone fluctuations. Sometimes doing a hair test isn't helpful because you're not going to take action off of it. And if you think those test results are going to stress you out more, then I would say don't do it. But like before, halfway, and then I think right before you go, right before your due date-ish, that's when I would recommend doing the hair test. I think that's like, because it's going to change what you're doing, right? If you take it halfway through, then you know, okay, I'm going to, you know, this improved, this did not. I see a lot of tests improve in pregnancy, which is really cool. And it's like, okay, so now I'm going to work on this. Some people do it because maybe their iron is out of balance and they want to take a look at things like copper to see what's going on there and work on correcting that. So that could be a tool that you're using, but you really want to be able to take action on it. And then right before you go into that postpartum season, it's helpful for, again, supplements, right? Not a ton will change for most people, I would say, like, because you know you want to continue replenishing postpartum. So like for me, not a ton changed. I was like, okay, so a lot of my minerals improved. I went from a fast four. I was like halfway through pregnancy, I was like a fast four, which is not good. But again, I was very stressed. And then right before I had my daughter, I was a fast one and my minerals improved. And I was like, thank God. But it helped me prioritize different supplements and like certain foods. I was like, okay, I still really need to work on calcium postpartum. So how am I going to work on getting that into my postpartum food prep, or just like meals that I'm going to rotate, stuff like that. And then as far as like postpartum, when you're in it, again, you want to be able to take action. So for most people, I say wait at least 4 months. If you are having an especially hard time postpartum and you're just like, I don't even want to look at a test right now, don't do it. Don't feel like you have to do it because you should. You want to do the test when you're going to be able to do something with the information. So if you don't have the capacity for that, that's okay. Just don't do it. It's okay. I guarantee you the capacity will come and then you'll do the test and you'll feel good about it and you'll be ready to take action. But those are like the three times that I like to do it. And then 4+ months postpartum, kind of depending on the person. If you feel like you need it, if you feel really good and you're like, you know, I want to wait till I'm closer to a year, I think that makes sense too. But that's kind of like how I like to time the hair test throughout pregnancy. Okay, I'm going to go through some common questions. It's going to be a long episode. Sorry, guys. Okay, how soon to get pregnant after giving birth in terms of mother being depleted of minerals, vitamins, etc.? I kind of answered this in the beginning when I talked about like our decision on getting pregnant. And I just think it's so many things. I don't see how someone could be ready like sooner than a year postpartum, but I also don't, you know, I don't know you. So I think you want to be cycling again for sure. If you know, sometimes you don't get to choose. Sometimes you conceive and you're like, okay, I'm pregnant. But if you are trying to plan, I would say you want to have at least a few cycles where you're ovulating, ideally. So that's something to look out for. When your postpartum and your cycle has not returned yet, then I would say that's a sign that your body is probably not ready to conceive. Doing testing can be really helpful because I think like putting a specific timeline on it, like for like waiting 2 to 3 years, it's like, okay, that might be appropriate for some people, but that might not be appropriate for others. Like I was definitely not depleted when I got pregnant again. But I also like, I have access to healthy foods. I eat enough food always. I was working on my stress, which burns up and uses more nutrients. Right? So that makes a big difference. Like, are you super duper stressed? Are you eating enough? Are you over exercising? How's your gut health? Are you digesting and absorbing your food well? So many things are going to impact that. So I think you can definitely, like Lauren from Innate Fertility, she has some great posts on child spacing. I don't know if she has any podcasts on it, but she has the Innate Wisdom podcast that you could definitely check out to see if she has anything on that. But I know she recommends like child spacing, but it's like, you got to figure out what's right for you. And like, you definitely want to be healthy going into another pregnancy. And a lot of that's going to come back to how do you feel? How are you sleeping? How's your libido? How is your energy? How do you recover from workouts? How's your motivation to work out? How's your mood? Things like that. How's your basal body temperature? You know, are you cold all the time or do you feel generally pretty good? I feel like a lot of people will know. And I think of clients that are like, they are planning to conceive again. And a lot of times they're like, yeah, I think I'm ready. And when I ask them why, it's a lot of these things. Well, you know, like I've had really good periods. I haven't had any painful periods and I'm not super symptomatic. I'm not like hungry all the time. I feel very satiated. I'm sleeping through the night. On top of like labs that they get back and they're like, wow, the things look really good. You know, if you get labs back and you do look super depleted, then it would definitely make sense to wait. Or if you were like me and you're like, I want to work on my gut health, then that's, I would ideally you would do that between pregnancies because it can be hard to do a lot during pregnancy. But I would say it definitely depends on the person because in like your whole life, right? Because it's, I think it took me a while to get replenished and everything for my first pregnancy because I definitely was living in a stressed out state for a very long time. But then having those tools and having that good lifestyle foundation down for a while and then having that year postpartum made a big difference. But not everyone's in that spot. So like you could see me conceiving 13 months postpartum and be like, oh my gosh, that's way too soon for me. I have friends that are like, their kids are three and they're like, I'm not ready to have another baby, but I know I want one in the future. And that's okay. So there's so much that goes into it. And I think how stressed you are, your nutrition, how you feel day to day, and how quick someone's going to be replenished is going to depend on the person and all those circumstances and their health history and all of that. But I'm sure, I know Lauren has some good posts on Instagram about child spacing if you want to dig into that more. But honestly, I would test. I would not guess. And I would test your levels or do hair testing. I'd do blood work to look at things like vitamin A and copper and iron and see, like, are you in a good place? And then, of course, thinking, like, it's not just vitamins and minerals. You also want to be in a good place, like mentally, emotionally, schedule-wise, all that stuff. Because that is going to affect your stress big time and that will affect all those nutrients. Okay. Things I'm doing differently this time around. I went through it. I feel like the light exposure, more focus on nervous system, a lot more focus on fun, which is easy with a toddler, right? I think that makes things a lot easier. I'm doing, I would say, less lab testing. Last time I tested, like I did a full Monty looking at like my full iron. I want to say at least twice, maybe three times. I think I did it first, second, and third trimester. I did it before we conceived and my iron looked good. And I was like, okay, thank God. I haven't done it since. I've been testing hemoglobin, but it's like, I don't have anyone to watch my daughter to go get blood work. So I'm using Paloma Health. They have an at-home thyroid test kit. That's what I used in the first trimester, and I'll definitely utilize it again throughout pregnancy to monitor my thyroid. But I also will look at my body temperature, my energy, how I'm feeling, all those things. How am I recovering from workouts? Am I waking up feeling rested or am I still like very fatigued? Those types of things. So I would say that's a big thing. I'm not doing as much lab testing because it's like, I can't go. I mean, I don't have anyone to watch her. So, and I can't bring her. That would be, I don't think they, everywhere I've gone, even I got an anatomy scan and I had to have my mom come down to Florida because I was like, they said, I can't bring her in the room. So I'm like, what do people do that have kids that have a spouse that's not home? You know, like, how do you go to all your prenatal appointments? It's just crazy. But yeah, so less testing, but I'm also not concerned. Like if I was concerned, I think I would find a way, but, I'm just not, cause I did it all previously and I knew where I was at when I got pregnant, which I think is very helpful. I would say the supplements are similar, but not exactly the same. Like I'm still doing beef liver. I am using a small amount of cod liver oil. I'm going to retest my hemoglobin. I may drop that, but, there's so many benefits to it in pregnancy. Like it's going to give you lots of beneficial vitamin A, vitamin D, and then it's also got DHA in it. So it's one of those things where, you know, I may continue taking it. I may not, depending on how my, I'm going to test vitamin A probably next time my mom's here, like in like end of second trimester. And then magnesium, vitamin E, selenium, and iodine, because I'm using a small amount of iodine and I'm always taking selenium with it. And then magnesium is also a cofactor for iodine. So those are important. I'm not taking vitamin C this time because I eat so many vitamin C rich foods. Like we eat a lot of oranges being in Florida this time of year. So that's another important cofactor for iodine that I'm not supplementing with because I'm definitely getting enough from food. And I would say the big difference, I'm not doing any immune support because my immune system looked really good. But I am doing milk thistle and reishi. Milk thistle to support my liver. It's also good for histamines. I haven't been histamine-y, but I don't want to be, and I want to make sure I avoid anything like that. And then reishi can be very helpful, calming for the nervous system. It's good for a healthy stress response. It's also good for histamines. So those are like the biggest differences. And then with exercise, I would definitely say my training's different. I did a program that was like 4 days a week, strength and conditioning last time. This time I'm doing my friend Adina's programming, Adina Rubin. She's been on the podcast before. I've had her inside Patreon. She's great. And it's 3 days a week. It's like, it's strength training primarily with kettlebells, which is so good when you have a toddler. Can I just say, I feel like every toddler mom should have to just do kettlebell work or at least incorporate some, because maneuvering that kettlebell around and having really good control over your pelvic floor and pressure and everything is pretty much the same as a toddler. So I think that's been really helpful. And then a lot of Pilates, oddly enough, I used to love Pilates. I did all the time. But I just got away from it, and it's something where I just really enjoy it, and it really helps me avoid having any like back pain in or anything. And it's really good for getting my core back into a good place postpartum. So it's something that I'm like, I'm going to do it all pregnancy just because it feels so, so good. So that's, my training is definitely different, and so much walking. I'm constantly walking around and we go for a lot of walks. So I would definitely say I'm more active this time. Those are like the big differences. And then like nervous system stuff, slowing down, doing things for myself when I can, and just like that first morning light for me is like so important, and making sure we get up, have our breakfast outside. We're outside for like a good couple hours in the morning. And that makes a big difference in how I feel throughout the rest of the day, how we sleep, all that stuff. Okay. Tips for first time moms. I would say if you're pregnant with your first child, learn about the nervous system and learn how to regulate yourself, because if you can do this now, obviously it's going to change once you have a kid, but if you can go into that postpartum state more regulated, I think that is just going to help you so, so much. I think because I was like so stressed my last pregnancy and trying to like figure everything in life out, it like, I mean, I definitely like immediately as soon as I had her, I was like a different person. There was a lot of like stress in the beginning with the feeding and the ties and all that stuff. And I just wish that I had had more tools during that time. So learn about the nervous system, go check out Irene Lyon. She has an insane amount of free information. In the episode I did with her though, she has a field survival guide, and that's like where you should get started. She has so many free resources. It's like, where do I go first? And that is a great PDF that walks you through just getting to know your nervous system, starting to tune in. She talks about following your impulses on my episode I did with her, which is something I'm going through her 12-week program now. And it's something that a lot of us don't do, and especially as moms, right? So if you can start to do those things now, I think that can be, I think that's definitely the most helpful thing ever. Cause it's, if you're regulated, you're going to be less likely to be stressed and overwhelmed and questioning everything, postpartum when you have your baby. So that's what I would say. Thoughts on placenta encapsulation. So I think you could do encapsulation. I think you could freeze it and add to smoothies. You could cook it and eat your placenta. You know, it's so hard to find like any research on this. Not that we always need research, but, we see it in some cultures where they consume it. A lot of animals eat their placenta postpartum. I just like have seen such mixed things with it with people that I know. I saved mine. It's still in my freezer, actually. It's probably too old now, but from my first pregnancy. But I didn't end up eating it because I just was like, I don't think I need it. Like I just did not feel, I didn't really feel depleted. I was like, I think I'm good. And I've had a lot of friends, family members, clients, either they take it usually in the encapsulated form and they feel amazing. And they're like, yeah, it helped my breast milk supply. It helped my energy. Or it goes the other way. And I've had a lot of people say, I got anxiety. I started experiencing really bad mood swings. My supply dipped. So again, it's like, how healthy is your placenta? Is there any like possible bacterial overexposure? I mean, it's really tricky. I have seen people do the best when they consume it like 6 to 9 months postpartum, which is really interesting, versus like right after. But I just didn't feel called to consume it. So I was like, I'm not going to worry about it. I froze it and that was it. I didn't feel like I needed it, but I think, you know, I think it's important to like save it. I'll probably like bury it or do some like activity with Eliana with it or something. I definitely won't just toss it. We'll do something to like commemorate. And I'll definitely save it this time around for sure. And just in case I want to encapsulate it or put it in smoothies or something and consume it, but I'm not going to like force it, you know? You know, there's hormones, there's nutrients, but it's like, it may, you know, depending on how healthy it is, it may not, I have no data to show this, but, that's like what my mind comes to when I've seen people have such mixed, experiences with it. So I think if you feel called to it, do it. I don't think it's something that you absolutely have to do, but I still think it's cool to save it and do something with your placenta for sure. Okay. Women who get pregnant that weren't healthy to begin with. In some examples, like having low minerals, chronic autoimmune issues, what can be done for this type of person? I would say, start supporting your body now. It's never too late. You know, you're pregnant now. Everything you do is going to make a difference. It's going to support you and your baby. So even if your health wasn't great to begin with, start working on things now. So I would say like adrenal cocktails, very basic, easy. Start adding those in. If someone had low minerals, I'd also want them to start adding trace minerals concentrates drops to their water, just to make sure every time they had water, it was like truly hydrating them and they're not just going to pee it all out. And then, you know, depending on what their minerals looked like, maybe just adding some sea salt to the water. I'd probably really focus on potassium rich foods. I mean, eating nutrient dense foods in general, like getting enough protein at your meals. There's so many vitamins and minerals in protein foods, animal foods, right? So that's really important, but plant foods are also really important. That's primarily where we're getting a lot of our potassium, good healthy fibers, things that are really good for our gut bacteria. So getting a mix of those, I don't think it necessarily has to be different, but like when I think of someone that has low minerals and chronic autoimmune issues, I'm like, what does your day-to-day look like? How stressed are you? How stressed have you been the last few years? So those are like, that's probably the first thing I'd be like addressing with someone, unless they like were not eating enough. And cause you know, all those things are going to minimize your stress. So I would say, listen to the first few episodes of this season where I talk about how to eat to support your hormones. I talk about cortisol, digestion, all those things. Those are going to be really, really important. And of course, like, gut health is super important for autoimmune conditions, but if you are super duper stressed, it's probably not going to help that much. It's really hard to fix chronic gut issues if you have chronic stress, because that stress and that fight or flight impacts our autonomic nervous system, which is absolutely going to impact our vagus nerve and our gut. So I would really focus on, what does your day-to-day look like? How stressed are you? I'd go back, listen to those episodes. I don't think, you know, some immune support doesn't hurt, like immunoglobulins, maybe that's colostrum. Maybe it's something like that Mega IgG 2000 supplement that I love so much. So many people have messaged me on Instagram saying that they started taking it and they can eat foods that they didn't tolerate before. And I'm like, yay. So it can be very helpful. It was very helpful for my eczema, my first pregnancy. But if you are super stressed like that, like that's what I think of, like what's depleting minerals, probably some gut stuff going on. I would definitely support digestion. Like especially if you're like, you know, you hear me say eat nutrient dense foods and you're like, well, I don't digest the protein rich foods well, then maybe you add some digestive bitters or apple cider vinegar in before your meals and see how you tolerate that, slowing down at your meal times. But my kind of thinking is that this person probably needs to slow down in general. But based on the information I have, like those are the things I'd focus on. And they also asked, like, what do you do for low iron if beef liver isn't doing much? I got this question quite a few times. So I would opt for like a higher iron whole food supplement. So that could be like spleen. Spleen is very high in iron. Blood Vitality from Ancestral Supplements, they also have spleen. That's also very rich in iron, and it's whole food. So it's not going to cause imbalances. It's not going to make you constipated, all that kind of stuff. So I would definitely consider something like that. But then also looking at, like, you know, if iron is still low, like beef liver has a lot of copper and some vitamin A, you might need more vitamin A. It might not be a complete copper thing. So you might want to consider like cod liver oil or just upping those vitamin A rich foods. Or you might need to consider, like, it's tricky because if this person has autoimmune issues, low minerals, and they also have low iron, I did a case study inside Patreon for iron deficiency and looking at it during pregnancy, and the person I used, like, she had a history of chronic gut issues. And so I didn't want to do too much iron with her because she likely, that was going to drive her gut issues further. So we really focused on like Blood Vitality, cod liver oil, and getting enough copper in her diet. But even like, you know, copper shifts in pregnancy. So it could become less bioavailable if you're deficient in vitamin A. So like, I would really look at the vitamin A piece, but then I'd also look at like, are you making enough ceruloplasmin? Maybe you need something like taurine. That can also really help with digestion because it's good for bile. But those are like the big things I would look at without like obviously knowing more about this person. And then food aversions to meat, even in the second trimester, tips, support your digestion. Because I've seen so many women improve their ability to eat meat in pregnancy when they had more robust digestion. So relaxing at meals, and I'll put the digestion episode in here too. Obviously not all digestive bitters are safe during pregnancy, but the chamomile ones from Urban Moonshine are. Apple cider vinegar, just 1 or 2 teaspoons before a meal. If you have really bad reflux, do less, and I would dilute it in water. And then find protein sources that you can tolerate. So when I think of clients, it's like smoothies are huge. Getting or just like mixing some sort of like whey protein powder or casein into something else. Like I have this protein mineral rich pudding that I got to make that again soon. I was like on a kick with it postpartum, and I'm like, is that what helps my minerals? I had that like every night for like 3 months. I have a reel on Instagram with it. Let me put it in the notes. It has like the recipe. I'll link that in the show notes, but like something like that, it's like, how can you get that? Like if it's a powder, it's like you can add it to yogurt so that it has even more protein. You can put it in smoothies. You can make a pudding. However is going to get you to consume it. And then what proteins do you tolerate? Like, can you do, like I think of a lot of clients, like they do better when it's like mixed into something like a casserole, or like, I remember my first trimester, it's not like an aversion. It's just like, I couldn't eat a lot of protein at any food at once. Everything is just like this teeny tiny meal. It was torture, but doing things like chicken salad, egg salad, like that really helped me consume more for some reason. And I definitely see that with people that have like an aversion to it. So it's like, that might sound terrible to you. That's fine. I have a lot of my clients do really well with sandwiches when they have protein aversions, but they're like, I can put deli meat on a sandwich, and they'll just heat it up, like make it like a grilled sandwich, and they love it. And they can get like a good amount on there. So that's like a great way to mix it in. But I think like casseroles, and then avoiding all or nothing. I've had so many clients that like won't have it because they can only eat a couple bites. I'm like, eat the couple bites, right? It counts. And I find a lot of people can tolerate dairy better in pregnancy. And so it's like, drink milk, mix the whey protein or casein into milk, or, you know, whatever it is that's going to get you to consume it. Whichever forms work best for you. Like those are all things that I would definitely try. Okay. Are there certain things I do in the first trimester that help with morning sickness? I eat my protein foods first. I do that always, but, I am emphasizing that because I do think that makes a big difference for nausea because it helps keep my blood sugar more regulated. I also always end up eating like every 2 to 3 hours, usually closer to two, which is incredibly annoying, but like it made a big difference. You can also try adding magnesium bicarbonate to your adrenal cocktails because a lot of nausea, like I talked about, I think last pregnancy, because I still had some like nausea, but like I just felt like I needed to eat very frequently into my second trimester. And I think that was just reflux, honestly. And I think a lot of nausea in the first trimester is also very refluxy, not always, but I think it can be. And so things like magnesium bicarbonate, it's a bicarbonate, or like baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, that bicarbonate can help neutralize some of that stomach acid. So you'd only want to do this on an empty stomach, but doing it in the morning, like first thing or before bed, especially if when you're, you know, later in pregnancy, when your belly's really big and you have a lot of progesterone, you can definitely get more reflux, when you're lying down. So I would say magnesium bicarbonate before bed could be really helpful. And then just like, I just think of like high histamines in general can really drive nausea. I think that's a huge part of it. Mineral deficiencies, nutrient deficiencies, absolutely. So like B vitamins, phosphorus can really drive morning sickness for some people. We've had clients that had low phosphorus and they use a supplement called PhosFood from Standard Process. And it's been like night and day. Doesn't work for everyone, but it really works for some people. And then like addressing nutrient deficiencies, it's like you want to figure out where your nausea is coming from because it can come from different places. So like, is it histamine, gut health related? Is it blood sugar related? Is it that you have reflux? Is it that you have some sort of nutrient deficiency? And when you can kind of narrow that down, I think it helps you like take the right path. And then let me see. Quitin Hypertonic is like a mineral water that like I felt like helped me so much in that first trimester with just like energy, feeling hydrated. It's one thing where I usually did it like first thing in the morning, I would take a little bit, but Quintin Hypertonic, because they have isotonic, hypotonic, but the hypertonic was super helpful. It's like microfiltrated seawater. And I did it first thing, you want to do an empty stomach. So I would do it first thing in the morning, I would take a swig and I would be like, bring me to life. So you could definitely try that. Again, that's what worked for me. It's going to be different for everyone. Okay, so how tips for preparing for a second baby, second pregnancy after Hashimoto's hypothyroid diagnosis? It happened right after having the first baby. What to look for or consider? So I would say very common to have that because the hormonal shifts during pregnancy and postpartum can definitely pop up. I would want to know, like, how do your thyroid levels look? How are your antibody levels? You want to get a baseline of that. And then I would definitely consider looking at your gut health with a GI map because you want to address this one to feel good during your second pregnancy, but also to help get those antibody levels down if they are elevated. And then stress, like I mentioned before, for that other case, we really want, like this is a major driver for autoimmune conditions, especially. So you'd want to look at that for sure. And you know, it would be your second pregnancy. So like, what is your day-to-day with your current child and your spouse look like, if there's a spouse in the picture, you know? So that's just something I would definitely consider. Okay. So reflux. So the things that I think of is we want to know, is it coming from low stomach acid? Cause sometimes we're entering pregnancy with not good stomach acid production, and low stomach acid can cause reflux in pregnancy. A lot of reflux is driven by the hormonal increase in progesterone, because that relaxes our esophageal sphincter and allows the stomach contents to go up into the esophagus. So I think it definitely can be hormone related, but it's like if you already had low stomach acid to begin with, then that sphincter might already be a little bit lazy. So it's not like staying closed. So that could be an issue. You could try using digestive bitters or apple cider vinegar. I would say a very small amount. That will make it worse for some people. But for others, it will resolve it. So again, like you got it, everyone's going to be different. So is it from low stomach acid? Is it a histamine issue? Do you have a long history of digestion and gut issues? Maybe you don't tolerate a lot of foods, or you feel like you react to everything. Do you have skin issues, skin rashes, that sort of thing? Then I would say it could probably be a histamine thing. So you'd want to address gut imbalances, which you would want to do a stool test for that. But things you could do without testing, you could do some sort of mega IgG 2000, like that immunoglobulin supplement, colostrum. Milk thistle is really great for lowering histamines, and it will support your liver. And then reishi is another good one that can help with histamines. And then otherwise, like say you try the bitters or the apple cider vinegar and you're like, oh, I made it worse, then you could try magnesium bicarbonate or the baking soda, like I mentioned, for the nausea related to reflux. So you'd want to only like an eighth of a teaspoon of baking soda, and you'd want it first thing in the morning, or you could just take a swig of magnesium bicarbonate. It's liquid, or you could add that to your adrenal cocktail and just drink it between meals. And then I would experiment with supplements, because I have seen so many women have bad reflux and then they come off their prenatal and they make like their own version of it. And they're like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. So that is something, or if you're taking other supplements other than your prenatal too, you might want to consider stopping them, experimenting with it. Obviously talk with your doctor. Vitamin C is a big one that can also flare reflux. So I would look at, are you taking even a whole food vitamin C? And if you stop that, does it improve? I've also seen milk thistle make it worse for some people. So that could be one you experiment with if you're taking it, or drinking milk thistle tea, something like that. And then again, it could be related to progesterone. So things like, you know, can I lower more acidic foods in my diet? Like, obviously that's not going to get to the root cause, but it could definitely help. Being mindful with grains, sweets, and sugar, and too much of those, that's typically going to exacerbate it for most people. And try limiting those foods before bed, you know, before you're going to be like lying down and everything. But yeah, those would be the big things that I would look at. And again, it's going to be a little different for everyone, like what you respond best to, but I think the experimentation is worth it. I will say a lot of people do well with adding magnesium bicarbonate or baking soda to their adrenal cocktails. I guess they're like, it's gone. So it could be something as simple as that, but I would definitely experiment. Okay, I got everything. Hour 15 minutes, not too bad. I'm going to link all the resources I mentioned in the show notes, so definitely go check those out. And if you want to get even more Q&A time, you can go to patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. But I hope you enjoyed this episode. Definitely let me know what you thought about it. Tag me on Instagram. If you listen, shoot me a message, let me know your thoughts, and I will see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Are You Menstrual podcast. If you want to support my work, please leave a review and let me know how you like the episode. This lets me know like what you guys want more of, less of. I read every single one and I appreciate them more than you know. If you want to keep learning, you can get access to the bonus episode and additional resources on patreon.com/hormonehealingrd. I'd love to have you in there. Thanks again, and I will see you in the next episode.